All right, welcome back. Got another great show this week for you on the Big Ticket Life Show. This is where leaders share incredible stories of healing, impact, and courageous leadership that they're taking on in their lives and in their businesses. Look, you can watch us live right here on the social media channel. We're broadcasting out live on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn every week, Tuesday at noon, East Coast time. You can pick it up on your favorite podcast player the Monday thereafter. And if you want, Monday through Friday, 5 to 6 a.m., you can pick it up on DBTV, which is a streaming app found on Roku sticks, Fire sticks, smart TVs. Go to dbtv.tv to learn more about that. DBTV is something for everybody. A lot of amazing shows, cooking shows, business shows, children's shows, music, sports, entertainment. I just saw they're loading in some Kentucky Derby related programming now that we're this close to May. So check us out on DBTV. Albert Perry, I don't know about you, man, but I'm happy for spring weather. Happy for May 1 to be tomorrow. And I'm happy our Eagles had a rocking draft. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Great. Awesome to be with you. And yeah, I'm pumped for that draft too. Jeff and I are here in Pennsylvania, both Eagle fans. I might be cheating a little bit. I'm drinking a cup of coffee out of my Phillies mug. The '80s world championship Phillies mug, coincidentally. So, love my Philadelphia sports for sure. But yeah, the birds had a good draft. I'll give them an A for effort.
We definitely did. It's always good when you get other professional players who happen to be on your most bitter rival to say, you know, that team got lucky. Those Eagles got lucky. Yeah. You know, you break a man when a professional athlete has to resort to something like that. Yeah. And that would be Micah Parsons with the Cowboys. So, love it. Love that rivalry. Love all things Philly sports, but we're not here to talk about that per se. Here to talk about all the great things that you're doing, the way you're living, the way you're leading your people. You know, you're a realtor, Century 21 office there in the greater Philadelphia area. And I thought we'd just kick off with some topical news, because really this shows your type of leadership, right? And so, yeah, of course, if you wouldn't gather, I have a realtor on the phone, topical news, big news. If you're not paying attention, you ought to be, because at some point you're going to buy a house, sell a house. You need to know about this. But there was a big, big news break about how commissions are paid. And I'm not going to try to distill it. I've got an expert on here for it. So, Albert, I'm going to let you talk about what this settlement was about, how it affects people, and the opportunities you saw within this news and what's on the other side.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I know we've had this show planning for a little while here. And Jeff and I, we know each other outside of the real estate space, just in some general leadership stuff that we do together. And, but I can't seem to get away from this news around commissions. I guess it's part of being in real estate these days. There's been a lot of front page news around it, a ton of misinformation, truthfully. So always happy to kind of clear the air. We were doing some of our prep for this, Jeff asked if we could go into this subject a little bit. And I thought it was great just because of the amount of misinformation out there. So, you've seen stuff on some very major publications that talk about commissions, buyer commissions going away, or you've seen some headlines around 6% commissions going away. And the truth is, as long as I've been in real estate, that's been since 1996, so 28 years now, but who's counting? And I grew up in a real estate family. My mother has been in real estate since 1977. So I was the kid doing the homework at the real estate desk in the office. She was a single mom and she picked me up from school. I'd be at the office doing the homework while she was following up on some leads. The truth is, commissions have been negotiable from the time I got into this business and even been around this business. So, and that part hasn't changed. I mean, that's just something for clients to sit down, prospective buyers, prospective real estate agents, to sit down with their client, build value for themselves, hopefully. Come to an agreement on how they may help each other, come to some sort of fee agreement on what that might look like for them. There is no set commission. The National Association of Realtors, Pennsylvania Association of Realtors, Local Association of Realtors have never had a set commission. So that's one of the pieces of misinformation that's been out of there. That's come out in this settlement. It's almost perceived, if you were to just read the headlines, that if you were to have listed your home with me, there would have been a set fee that would have been would have automatically been. And that's not right. Each broker right. gets to set their policy, and that hasn't changed. So I guess that's the kind of long and short of where it is. I mean, I guess the biggest change you'll see, and this is, you know, you're going to have viewership from, you know, Jeff and I are here in Pennsylvania, and you're probably going to have viewership here outside of PA. And the truth is, real estate law and the regulatory bodies around what we do as real estate licensees are going to differ from state to state. So buyer agency doesn't look the same from state to state. So fortunately for Pennsylvania, we've had buyer agency on the books. That's really what a lot of this, has kind of come around to be, is that real estate agents, in line with this settlement. So the National Association of Realtors reached a settlement on a case that had been in the court system, I believe, since 2019.
Oh, wow. I wasn't aware it was out there.
Yeah, it's been around. It's been kind of in the backdrop. There were other plaintiffs. There were other defendants. My firm here, Century 21, our parent company, Anywhere Real Estate, was one of the original defendants. They came to a settlement prior to the National Association of Realtors coming to settlement. Some other big name real estate brokerage houses have were either settled before the National Association of Realtors or settled since the National Association of Realtors. So a lot of people just moving on from this, but at the crust of it is that, you know, buyer's agents, if you're going to work with me as a buyer's agent, if I'm going to work with you as a buyer's agent, you and I should have some understanding of what that relationship's going to be, how it's going to look, and what my fee is going to be in conjunction with that sale. A lot of what's been kind of going around is this multiple listing service commission. You know, the real estate agents, most real estate agents may have a local database that they deal with in their respective markets called the multiple listing service. Mm-hmm. In the multiple listing service, if you were a buyer, let's say purchasing a house in your neck of the woods here in Pennsylvania, and I was the agent that was working with you, and you wanted to go look at a house that wasn't listed with my firm, it was listed by another firm, I could go into this database, the multiple listing service, and I could see what, if anything, the real estate agent and their brokerage was offering to buyer agents as compensation. So whether you and I had a direct fee agreement or not, there may have been, depending on the house you purchased, there may have been compensation built in from the seller agent and their agreement with their seller around compensation. So I might just know, if you wanted to go look at 123 Main Street down the street from your office there, because you're thinking about moving your family, I could go in and I could see one of the peers in our industry had it listed for sale, and that peer had it listed with a fee. You know, let's call it a half a dozen donuts, whatever the fee is. You know, they would have that fee out there. And then I would know that if you ended up buying that property and I was your agent, at minimum, I could depend on that fee, unless there was some additional fee that you and I had come to an agreement with. Okay. The good news here in Pennsylvania is that we've had fee agreements with our buyer clients for years. I mean, we didn't have to work with buyer agency with an exclusive fee agreement. There were also non-exclusive arrangements where you and I might just agree for me to work for what was offered in the MLS, assuming you bought something in the MLS. But many brokerages, I know our brokerage has, you know, we would work in many exclusive arrangements, you know, where we would treat our buyers like sellers have been treated in this industry for over 100 years, where we sit down, talk to you about the services that we have, talk to you about value that we can deliver should you decide to hire our firm to work with you in a buyer agent capacity, talk to you about what our fee is, and then you would sign a fee agreement, assuming you saw value in that. You don't have to, you know, just like sellers don't have to see value. If you were a seller and I was going on your listing appointment tonight, you may hire me, you may not hire me, depending on how I propose that I'm going to help you and where you see value in that. So it's, you know, I don't see that things are changing drastically, The biggest difference, though, is that we're not going to have the multiple listing service to rely on now for compensation. If I was going to show you houses later this year, right now we still have the multiple listing service, but sometime later this year, they're saying July now, sometime later this year, the multiple listing service will not offer compensation now. So it won't be displayed there. It doesn't mean that real estate brokers and their clients can't offer cooperative compensation to buyer's agents. It just can't be communicated via the multiple listing service. So if you were a seller and you were still interested in offering cooperative compensation, like so many of the sellers I'm talking to now, there's still a vehicle for doing that. Real estate agents are still happy to work in that way. And that's the way that, you know, I just recently going to be selling my own home, an investment property that I own. And you better believe that I'm going to be offering buyer agent compensation as part of my structure, because I really believe the value that the legion of buyer's agents out there bring to me, the seller, you know. So, just sit down and make sure you're working with a real estate professional who can have these conversations with you, and you'll decide what's right for you. You'll decide on a fee agreement. If it's not the agreement that you want, there will be other real estate professionals out there who will, I'm sure, work and offer a whole suite of opportunities with different fees and structures. There's someone out there that'll have a match for you for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and to put a bow on this, I mean, you know, I always kind of have to snicker a little bit at these, and I'm saying this, Albert Perry's not saying this. This isn't a statement reflective of Century 21. This is a statement reflective of this guy right here on his show. But I always have to snicker when these settlements come down the line and government gets involved in things. You know, as you said, there's always been agreements that you can make as a seller agent, buyer agent, and whether you're on either side of selling that piece of property as the owner or buyer. And you need no more evidence than that than the billboards that have gone up maybe in your town where it says, we'll sell your home for 1% or 2%. Yeah. So a logical person would conclude, oh, it's not what I've just always been told. It's not just what is the norm. There are other avenues. And if it's on a billboard in a heavily regulated industry like real estate is, well, then they must have their ducks in a row and that must be legitimate. You know, whenever government seems to get involved in things, it kind of messes it up. You know, we had in the news also, no more late fees capping credit card late fees and overdraft fees that banks make. Well, banks make an awful lot of money on that. Now, do I agree with the way they do it? No, but should there be a late fee? I personally believe so. I think there should be overdraft fees. Here's the reality of what I think doesn't matter. Here's the reality of this regulation. The people who are toeing the line, doing the work, providing value, living life, managing their finances the right way in this instance. Now, in my business, when they do consumer financing of the products we sell in the retail business, everybody that finances to start 48 months or longer now just has a 2% fee added onto their contract to make up for these lost fees. So the good people get affected first.
Right.
Yeah. And that's just sad. And so I'll get off my soapbox there. I said all that just because Al kind of chuckled at it. It's not an endorsement of anything I just said. Just to be clear, yeah, just as a little aside, I always shy away from these businesses that have the lawyers and the bean counters checking boxes on what you can do. But anyway, you know, I wanted to talk about that and thank you for sharing. And you're so right. People do need to choose who brings them the most value. And if your person can't demonstrate that in front of you, as a seller, as a buyer, you need to be the one to decide that. But I wanted to talk about it because I knew Albert was greeting us as a place for opportunity. So maybe walk through, you knew this was coming, you manage a team, you work with a team of people, you lead others, you're just the outgoing president of the PA Association of Realtors. And so what was your leadership conversations about this, about the opportunity in this news?
But look, I see it's exactly that. I see this as an opportunity. It's an opportunity for our industry to get better first and foremost, which is, I guess, the positive side here. You know, I know how I'm going to perceive it as an opportunity in my own business, but truthfully, you know, it's time that this industry, you know, really pull itself up. And sometimes where there's changes that are out there that we're forced to do. I mean, I do think that, you know, for years, and again, each state's different. Pennsylvania is ahead of the curve with buyer agency. Some states are way behind the curve and have to bridge quite a bit of gap around it. But, you know, I'm a big fan of, and have been my entire career of really diving into your expertise, really figuring out what it is you bring to the table, what value you can add to your client. If you know, in real estate, there's 1.5 million realtors nationwide. And frankly, there's people who are real estate licensees who are not realtors. So there's even a larger number of licensed real estate agents, nationwide that can do what it is I do license wise. So unless I'm doing something, at a high level, or I'm bringing some value beyond what my license allows me to do, then chances are there's not enough business to really provide for my family the way I want to provide for my family. So I have to start really thinking about, you know, what do I want to do and how do I want to impact the clients I work with? Where can I leverage value? Sometimes the perception in real estate is, you know, they come, they hang a real estate sign, you know, they collect this fee. And, you know, and sometimes we're our own worst enemy in this industry because we'll advertise, you know, sold in, you know, in one day, you know, over asking price. It really starts to perpetuate that what we do is mm-hmm. easy and that what we do you know, doesn't require any kind of expertise. It doesn't talk to the struggle. It doesn't talk to the appointments you go on that might not lead anywhere, the stones that you turn right. over, the many buyers that you sometimes have to filter through to find someone who's qualified, someone who can, move forward in a productive way. Helping sellers, you know, in Philadelphia here, we have a lot of older houses. We have title issues, sometimes. You know, for you know, properties that might have been owned in the same family, clearing all that stuff up. Sometimes that, you know, a transaction falls through. So you never hear about the struggle side, you hear about the success side. And so I like that, you know, if I see a positive that comes out of this for the industry, it's that it's forcing us all to sit there and reevaluate how we're building value, not only to the seller, but to the buyer. And I do think, you know, for a long time, I've thought that the buyer should be handled just like the seller. You know, every piece of real estate transaction I've ever been involved in, there's always been a buyer, there's always been a seller, and there's always been a property. You know, those are the three components. And I don't see why we should handle the buyer and seller much differently, at least in my personal opinion. So that's mm-hmm. how I've been approaching my business. That's how I've been approaching, you know, training and developing our agent population. It's about really sitting down on both sides of that equation and figuring out what we can do to get better. So, you know, when this lawsuit started really kind of pushing the question, particularly on the buyer agency side and maybe even on the seller agency side, you know, and it woke up a lot of other folks in the industry to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, maybe we can't rely on the multiple listing service, to kind of outline what that buyer agency fee. I couldn't rely on the multiple listing service for my seller agent fee. That's something I had to work out with you. Mm-hmm. You and I had to come to a business meeting, come to an agreement with whatever that fee was going to be, and then we would move forward. But on the buyer agent side, there was this opportunity, you know, and I, you know, for me not to necessarily have that conversation with you, for me not necessarily to come to an agreement with you on that, but where there was something that was offered out there. So I think what this is going to do is just strengthen that muscle. And I think our brokerage, when I think about this internally, I think we're set up really well to meet this, where the customer wants to be met. Cause frankly, we were doing it a long time before any NAR settlement. This was something that we were really, you know, exclusive buyer agency was mm-hmm. where we wanted to go. As a brokerage and where we were going as a brokerage, just in our efforts, because we really, you know, exclusive buyer agency is much like what we've been offering our sellers for decades upon decades. It's exclusive seller agency, you know? So again, it forces the industry, to get stronger at something. And that comes with, you know, some people that will scare some people. Sure. You know, because anytime change comes, you do have a tendency to turtle in a little bit. You know, maybe even I fall a little guilty of that from time to time. But that's only a brief turtle. Right. At some point, I know that represents opportunity for me. So where am I going to? So all I'm doing is hitting the throttle on our buyer agency conversations. And what's great is everyone's eyes open, you know, because it has become front page news. So it's almost like, okay, I need to get better at this. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to exist in this marketplace and go, you know, go out there, and I can't depend on, say, the multiple listing service, you know, so I really believe that from an industry perspective, it'll force some conversations within that will, you know, will make us meet the consumer where they want to be met. And then also on the outside, just, I know I'm looking at it completely as opportunity because, you know, I want us to deliver value.
Yeah.
You know, anytime we get belly to belly with somebody. So,
yeah. Well, you know, before we move on, I just want to remind people watching, and this transcends real estate. You know, you said, you know, some in our industry perpetuate this thing that it's easy and we miss the struggle. And so to drill in on that a little easier, I mean, it's no different than if you've had, you know, you're somewhat handy, you can change your oil, you can change your brakes, but you just can't figure out this other problem with your car. And you take it to a mechanic and they largely have it fixed in a half hour, but you got a $500 fee for that. Or a plumber comes out and does a sewer drain fix, you know, but it only takes them an hour and you've been digging in your backyard for 3 days, right? What you're paying for there is experience. What you're paying for there is knowledge. What you're paying for there is connection. And so those homes, those instances where it does go for more than ask, or it does go on day one, what you might not see, and Albert, you referred to it, is maybe that realtor has had 30 buyers they're working with presently, and a handful of them are struggling. And they know that when this property that fits these boxes hits the market, they're ready to go. And so, yeah, why wouldn't you do that today? That's where the expertise, that's where the experience comes in. And what you're missing is those phone calls to build those relationships, to establish a relationship, to open up the Rolodex, to be able to say, you know what? Stay away from that house. That has a bunch of title issues, a bunch of lien issues. I've shown it. We went down the road. Like, time is money. Yeah. And in this kind of a market, competitive housing market, wherever you're at, you want a pro on your side. Of course, they got to demonstrate that, which Albert is so, he's dialed into and dug into here with us. Yeah.
Well, I've always looked at it, you know, anytime I have a discussion about my fee. You know, I've been talking about my fee for as long as I've been in this business. Whenever I've had a conversation about my fee, I always approach it as an investment. If all you're looking to do, and if you look at a dollar, you know, and if a dollar is what your property is worth, and the real estate agent is going to charge a fee, whatever that fee might be, and you're not left with a dollar, you're left with some, you know, portion of a dollar. That's remaining, you know, if that's how you perceive your real estate relationship, then okay, is it worth that fee? Maybe for the ease, you don't have to deal with the contracts, you don't have to deal with the showings, and you don't have to deal with all those things. And if that, you know, and so that, I think there is value to that, but bigger than that for me, and one, the reason when I list my home, in a couple of months, that we'll be selling, and we're going to, offer buyer agent commission, with our sale, even though it won't be, communicated through the multiple listing service. It'll still be communicated. The reason I'm still going to do that is because I believe in the process that the real estate, agents have set up long before I got in this business, which is that cooperation breeds, you know, the best opportunity, for the sellers, for the buyers to get access to the full inventory, to get the most significant return on their investment. You know, there are, you know, I sit down with for sale by owners oftentimes where I can do a breakdown almost any time. Matter of fact, I can't think of an instance where I didn't. If we were going on a for sale by owner appointment, and I take the sales that were sold, outside of our, you know, with outside of cooperation, you know, outside of the multiple listing service, I take those sales and I show you the, you know, in your market, right around your house, and I show you the lowest sale, the highest sale, and the median sale in the last 6 months. And then I go in the MLS and I do the same just with the real estate brokerage. The lowest sale is almost always higher. The highest sale is almost always higher. And I can tell you definitely the median sale is higher. Mm-hmm. Definitely the median. And it's usually significantly higher. When I go on these appointments, a lot of times it's, you know, 15, 20, 25%, you know, and that to me is the investment piece. And I'll do it per address when I go on the appointment. That's the part where I say, look, this isn't just about Al's going to take care of the paperwork. This isn't just about Al's going to take the showings and I don't have to worry about the showings now. This isn't about like, I don't have to do the open house. Al'll do the open house this weekend. This isn't about it. I mean, those are things that are add-ons, but really this is about how do I tap into that 23% return? Mm-hmm. Boy, and I'm just picking that number as a number, but it's a very distinctive number. Yeah. How can I tap into that so I can maximize my opportunity here? Yeah. And when you're working with a real estate professional who can demonstrate that to you, then when it comes time for me to talk about my fee, then that becomes, you know, now we're not really talking about a fee as much as we're talking about an investment you're making that you can, that you can expect a return on. The same is true on the buyer agent side. I just shared something on my Facebook page, maybe probably 3-4 weeks ago about a buyer who hired our firm. And she wanted to go out and purchase something. And what she ended up buying, we ended up helping her get 19% of the money to purchase that property from sources other than her, through grants, through credits, through, you know, so here was a buyer who was going to be an FHA buyer. That's how she came pre-approved to us. So for anyone who's in the know, an FHA buyer is usually putting 3.5% down. So that gave her so much buying capacity. But because we were able to get her all of this additional funds that came, she was able to put 20% down. She was able to avoid mortgage insurance.
I was just going to say.
Mortgage insurance does no benefit to the buyer. Some buyers are like, well, I'd love to insure my mortgage because then if I can't pay it, it won't hurt me. Well, no, that's not how that works. It works if you can't pay the mortgage insurance benefits the bank. If you can't pay the bank won't, you know, the bank's exposure is minimized. It doesn't help the buyer. Right. The mortgage insurance is just money that we're paying each month over and over again to protect the bank's position. So if we can avoid that, that's so much more power. So here's this lady. She bought this property in Philadelphia. And because of the relationship, and she takes a big piece of this credit, she was ready to do anything we asked her to do. Like she was like, let's do this. Let's get rock and roll. She was so pumped about her opportunity. And all you keep hearing about how affordability is eroding in the world, especially in our neck of the woods over here in southeastern Pennsylvania, affordability is eroding. And here's this lady who's done nothing but expand on her affordability. And I like to say that was in part due to us. So the fee agreement that she signed with us was for a whole heck of a lot less than the quantitative measurement that I could do. And she negotiated a better interest rate on her loan. So because of the product that she got. So I could even take this out 5 or 10 years or 15 or 30, because it was ultimately a 30-year loan. And I could say, well, because of our relationship, we saved you all this additional interest. Depending, if you only stay in the house 5 years, this is how much additional interest we pay.
Yeah.
Like that's what I want to do as a real estate professional in the marketplace.
Yeah.
That, and then the fee becomes, it's certainly a discussion we need to have, but the narrative on that discussion is so much different at that point in time, because now it's just like, Jeff, this is what we charge. Yep. This is what. And you're like, dude, where do I sign?
Yeah. You know, I'm going to contrast that tremendous success story with what happens when you don't have a pro like Al on your side. So I had a friend leave the Chicago suburbs. You know, left in a rough time. Housing prices weren't all, you know, weren't quite what they are today there. And, you know, they just wanted out. And so the house, they weren't willing to put money into the house. Essentially, they thought they were leaving $1,500 or so bucks in their pocket. Until at closing, the state of Illinois takes $1,500 when you move out of state.
Right.
As a penalty to leave the Chicago and surrounding suburbs.
Right.
Which,
we'll see you later.
Yeah. In and of itself, that I don't even understand how that's legal, but we won't go into that part of the show. Point being, no one of the so-called professionals along the way let him know this. Essentially, with the proceeds that were left, him and his wife were able to go have a nice steak dinner on their way out of town, and they wave goodbye for good. That's the difference between having pros in your corner and not.
Right.
You know, and
we definitely want everyone to understand the fees that are involved, and that's something that we're held to a very high standard industry-wise. Forget me as an independent professional in the market. We're required here in Pennsylvania, both on the seller side and on the buyer side, to give you a full estimation of your closing costs. And it might not be to the penny because there's certain moving parts that we're trying to hit, but it should be a really strong estimate.
Yeah.
And then as we approach settlement, we should be able to tighten that down. So the last thing that should happen is you sitting at the settlement table, where it's like, wait a minute. I thought I was leaving with a check. I got to bring one. Or I thought I was leaving with this size check, and now it's this size check. So
that shouldn't be
the case. Not in today's day and age.
Yeah. So listen, I mean, it's obvious you're focused on excellence. It's obvious you're focused on helping people. We met 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
At a tremendous conference, our friend Lisa Marie Platsky at her Upside Summit, which if you get the opportunity to go to that event, check it out. You should. I think it's upsidethinking.com is where to go for that, or Upside Leadership, one of those two. But we met there, tremendous life-changing event for both of us. And man, I saw you kind of almost have like an awakening. You really leaned into this courageous side of leadership, this vulnerable side of leadership. I love your morning posts on Facebook. There we go. Upside Summit. That's the place to go for sure.
I love Lisa. Upside Summit.
Man, she has so many connections in this world. I've been on just this year. I've been on three other, podcasts or group calls that I'm connected to. And there's been at least one person totally unconnected. Like, you know, where it's not the first degree, Kevin Bacon. We're down there at that sixth degree. And then there's Lisa Marie popping up.
Thank you for your intro here. And I got to watch the intro as you were going through it here for your viewers. Mm-hmm. And I saw some of the faces I recognize. From the Upside Summit. So it's good to see you leaning into that group.
Yeah.
I saw Jeff up there. I saw a few folks I've learned to grow to, really, admire and as I've gotten to know them better as well. So good connections were made there.
Yeah. I think there you are right there.
Oh, look at that. I should download that picture.
Yeah. So, I mean, I bring that up to say, you know, here's you living a life in this professional business, leading a professional association, contrasting that with a real vulnerable side of, hey, not every day is perfect. Not every day is perfect for me. And here's how my day isn't perfect. And yet you're leading yourself, leading your family. I love your stories of you and your kids and your wife and all the things you do together. But you're leading in such an authentic way. Talk about what that's done for you. Yeah.
I always think that's who I was deep down inside, you know, even as I came up, you know, long before I really leaned into that side of leadership. I'm always someone that was driven by the relationships that I have, and mostly the dome, the people in my dome, my wife, my kids. I have three children. I got a 17, 14 and a 4.5-year-old. So if you're doing the math, I'm 53. I got a 4.5. There she is. The other two. That was a quite the day coming home for, with that news, our surprise news. She's been great. The other, my other two kids, Lucia, Julian, and Evangeline are awesome. Christine and I are very blessed. But, you know, we approached our family a long time ago. Christine and I have been together, you know, we met in 1994. So, you know, this is, you know, we're a big year for us, 30 years together.
Yeah.
And then we
got
married in 2001. But we always planned on, you know, how we were going to shape our family. And how we were going to approach it. We waited a little while to have kids, but we wanted kids. And so much for me was so important with kids. And I'm speaking about my kids because I want to go back to your vulnerability and leadership. You know, growing up, I grew up in a single parent household. My father passed away when I was very young. I was 6 years old. Alcohol played a big part in his passing, among some other things too. But he was really on a grind. That took him from us at an early stage, left my mother, you know, pretty much penniless with my brother, who was 5 years younger than me. So a newborn, and me at 6 years old, to try to figure it out. Oh, there you go. And that's our dog Chipper. And that's my mother Marie to my brother Dan. So that's, I'm the handsome kid with the Phillies.
It was
roughly 1980 when the Phillies won the World Series. So, with the big afro and So like that to me, that became my notion of what I wanted from a family. You know, we were tight, you know, our family of three and Chipper, of course, we were a very tight knit family. My mother was like, it's us against the world. That was the way she kind of approached mm-hmm. life. And she got into real estate, you know, because she had to figure stuff out. She had to figure out what to do. She wouldn't take any assistance. She wouldn't take any help from anyone. She really wanted to kind of forge her way herself. And she dealt with a lot of issues herself, and she never took time for herself. You know, she always grinned and bared it. You know, she always put the weight of the world on her shoulder. So as a very young age, you know, I kind of became the man of the house here because I knew my mother was at her breaking point at any time. I could never share with her any challenges that were going on for me, or frustrations, or, you know, I always tried to keep things light. Keep things airy. I leaned into comedy, you know, comic support, anything I could do not to add on to what she was dealing with on her plate at the time. And she never focused on herself. And I really wish she had, because she's such a wonderful woman. And so many people that knew her, whenever I see them, she passed away in 2020. Mm-hmm. But most of the people who I'll run into now are like, oh man, I loved Marie. And I really think she left a lot on the table, because she didn't lean into her vulnerable side. You know, she didn't lead into, hey, I could use some help. And I don't mean, you know, necessarily government help, although maybe there's nothing to be ashamed of with that. If that's something that's why that's there for you.
Sure.
That's why those opportunities are out there for people like my mom, who might be able to use that as a bridge. You know, to move forward. But
yeah,
also,
I mean, just to put a pause there, you know, I was in Guatemala back in February, in this village where my aunt and uncle do mission work. And your story of, you know, your father passing on from alcohol abuse, your mother, great picture of you two, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that she passed.
Last picture of us together. That was the installation. Yeah. Of a friend of ours, Bill Festa, his installation as the 2020 president of Pennsylvania Association of Realtors. I was being sworn in that day as treasurer.
Yeah.
So mom took the trip up with some of our family and friends from Philly to be out in Harrisburg there for the swearing in. So
yeah.
she was gone a couple months later.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you got that photo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I interjected to paint that story of Guatemala because my aunt and uncle, they serve women with 4, 5, 6, 8 kids. Alcohol abuse is very prevalent in those villages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their government doesn't have that support, doesn't have that safety net. And I am a hardcore believer in agency and self-determination. But at the same time, I grew up with food stamps, mm-hmm. you know. I grew up with lunch tickets, and it was embarrassing because they're a different color, but it taught me a lot about resiliency, taught me about what I wanted, what I didn't want. There were some kids from the village.
Yeah, there you go.
And, you know, so I just wanted to point that out, that yes, it's a safety net. Yes, it can mean you have to put your pride in your back pocket. But I challenge you, if you've connected with Al and his mom and her story, Marie, take some time to care for yourself. If it means taking this assistance and you get 1 hour for yourself a week, 1 more hour with your kids a week, or 5 more hours or 10 more hours, you can leave that part-time job, still working full-time, but getting that benefit. Because that's where you're at in life. You know somebody that's like that. Let them know it's all right.
Right.
Be grateful we're in the nation we are, where we have that. Because I've seen it firsthand where we don't.
Right.
Sorry to interject.
No, I think that's a great place to take a stand there, because there's a lot of people who don't, you know, and so much of what we do sometimes is how other people, we believe how they will perceive it. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a part of my mom's issue was, and it maybe not so much, I mean, the government stuff for sure, but she just wouldn't put herself emotionally, on the table. She never wanted to, admit that she was struggling emotionally. She always wanted to paint the picture of having her stuff together. And she did have her stuff together on many fronts. She was very focused on her family. Her whole world was her two boys. So, you know, she wasn't out partying. She wasn't out, you know, looking, you know, to, you know, move on from her responsibilities. But maybe, you know, had she leaned in a little bit, what's the old adage about putting the oxygen mask on yourself?
You
know,
oh, yeah.
First thing they say on the plane. Mm-hmm. You know, if you hit some duress and the oxygen mask is out, make sure to put it on yourself before you put it on your family. Because that's the first thing you want to do, right? The oxygen mask comes out. Oh, where's my kids? Let me put this on. Oh, here's someone who needs assistance. Let me put it on. But if you don't affix it to yourself, you know, you're really, you know, your shelf life is becoming very limited at that point. So maybe you'll be a big help to somebody for a short period of time. But at some point, you've run the course of what you can help. Whereas you put the mask on. So I really like that visual aid for myself. And that's where I think emotional leadership, and leaning in and being vulnerable and showing people, hey, look, this is something I struggle with. You know, ironically with my father, he struggled with alcohol. Ironically, I was following that suit. And when I think about it, his father followed that suit. You know, he followed the suit, his father. So you think of generational, my grandfather, died young. You know, left him, you know, left my father as a child looking to figure stuff out. You know, he then, you know, did the same thing, left me at a really young age. I swore I would never do that. And then what do I go do is follow suit, because I would lean in, in an effort to run from pain myself. You know, whenever I would struggle, last thing I wanted to do was pick up the phone and call Jeff and say, yo, Jeff, this is what's going on. And just have an ear from you. I'm sure you would give me an ear if I needed 100%. An ear, you know, and be there for me, but I'd have to put myself out there for you. And you would, you know, and I'm sure you'd be happy to pour back into me, whatever you could, or just listen, you know, or just listen. Cause sometimes that's all someone needs. They don't need the answer. They just need to be heard. Yep. You know, they just need to know the world understands a little bit of the struggle that's going on out there. So, you know, I was following suit there too. And then, you know, I'm sitting here and I have these three kids with two of them. And I'm like, what am I doing? What legacy am I leaving for them? You know, are they going to follow, you know, is my son, my daughter is going to be the fourth generation of this that's now going to have this have an impact on their lives? Am I going to leave my wife, Christine, like my father left my mother, you know, forced to raise two boys on her own? So like that's and that's just a real reality conversation. You know, you need to have some resiliency to have those conversations with yourself, you know, because the answers aren't always the ones you want. You know, I always want to say, because I always held myself in high regard. It wasn't like I was a jerk or, you know, people always, you know, for years, my whole life, people say, oh, you're good people. You're great. And I heard the same things about my father. Anyone ever talked about my father always said great things. Oh, we loved your dad. He was wonderful. And I believe it. I don't think they're just telling me what I want to hear. I think, his stock was a strong stock. He just made some poor choices. And maybe some of that was maybe some of that was just, you know, he was
generational.
So I just, you know, one day I just said, I'm stopping. I'm going to have honest conversations with myself. If there's something I need to pull myself out on, you know, there's accountability in the world, you know, from other people, but I really want to hold myself accountable. And for me, the more vulnerable I've ever, and you know, and I still draw a box around what I'll show people. I mean, you and I have talked about that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things that I haven't opened up about, but whatever I have opened up about has only drawn people closer to me, you know,
yeah.
And good people. I'm not talking about people who are walking around the world, you know, preaching victim. You know, I'm talking about people like amazingly strong and wonderful people making a contribution in society. And they'll be like, oh, thank you so much. And it's like my tribe has been developing ever since I raised my hand and said, this is who I am. And this is, and it only continues to develop the more I do it. And I know that to be the same for you just because of some of the stuff you shared. And it's like, that's powerful. And that's really the vulnerable side of leadership. When you show people that you're a human being first, mm-hmm. you know, then that makes Al, the real estate broker, much more, you know, much more human. It makes me much more, much more relatable. Because find me someone that's not struggling out there in some
right.
way.
Yes.
You know, yeah. like seriously, I mean, like, you know,
that's, you know, you've shared so much great stuff there. And what I'll do to kind of commentate on it and add, I can 100% sit back up, you know, everything you're doing, the positive that comes in your direct messages, texts, emails, phone calls. Yeah, it's great. And, you know, that active part of offering an ear to somebody, you know, think about Marie and that pride that she had to not let down that guard and not give herself time. There's people doing things like that in every other regard of their life. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe what they're doing is trying.
Yeah, that's what
they're trying to keep up you because you are their measuring stick, and you don't think it because you got your own issues. But you're likely somebody's measuring stick somewhere out there.
Yeah.
And when you can show them, hey, I'm not this perfect person, and it's not that you or I ever say that about ourselves. But others may regard us in that way. As you said, your father, good stock.
Yeah.
I'd venture a lot of folks were kind of shocked when he passed from alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just this putting yourself out there in a way that says, I'm a human being, I'm infallible, but I'm determined to achieve these goals, this level of impact, this level of legacy. And if you want that, if that resonates with you, come along for the ride.
Yeah.
Stick around. So, we got about 10 minutes left here in our time, really about 5 or 7. This is that, you know, careful what you wish for, right? You get syndication, you get distribution on your show. Now I got rules. I got to be constrained in a box.
Yeah. That's all right. I like rules too.
Yeah. Rules are all right every now and then. So as we wrap up, you know, obviously I don't want you to name names or anything, but can you share any stories of maybe it's people on your team, maybe people on the real estate world, your personal life, who have seen this awakening, seen this commitment you have, and have raised their hand and been like, yeah, thank you. Thank you for being that leader.
Yeah.
Anything you can share there?
So ironically, today, I was at the gym. You know, one of the things I start every day with mm-hmm. my sunrise walk. It's anybody who follows me on social media. You know, I usually have a selfie of myself. The sun's usually involved in it, or I'll be at the gym, you know, because I was out before the sun, because the sun waits around to come up sometimes at 7 right. o'clock or whatever. So I love this time of year when the sun, yes, today.
So you got a twofer.
I got a twofer, gym and the sun. I was out a little earlier than that walking because the sun was out. So I actually caught the rise down on the Delaware River. And that's usually how I start all my day. Yeah, it's yesterday. Walking down at Ridley Park Lake. And, you know, I always, cause I clear my head, but at the gym today, someone I grew up with who I had kind of a casual relationship with back then, we weren't tight, you know, walks up to me, at the gym, all excited, like, Ryan, like I'd never seen him at the gym before. And frankly, I hadn't seen him in years, but we're connected on social media. And he walks up to me and he's like, oh my gosh, I was hoping I'd see you here. Cause I guess, you know, he sees some of the stuff I share and it's a picture of the gym and he lives in the region. So now he's going to the same gym, but he wanted to thank me. for sharing some of my vulnerability that I share on social media. I actually posted about it today. And, you know, you don't know who's watching, because if you're someone that counts like, if you count likes, if you count comments, you know, you might see somewhat of a reach. But the truth is, this guy, as far as I know, he's never I had no indication whatsoever that this guy was paying attention to anything I had to share until today when he saw me. And he runs up to me, practically tackles me and says, thank you. And then goes on to share that he's had some mental health challenges. And one of the things I've opened up about is having seen a therapist. You know, it was actually when my oldest daughter was six. I went first time ever and said, I need to go get some help. And I went to a therapist, and it was a therapist that was trained in, you know, trauma therapist. And it was one of the best things I'd ever done in my life, just by raising my hand and saying, hey, me. And I've shared that on social media. And he tells me he recently did the same about a year ago, started seeing a therapist. And about 3 weeks ago, he joined the gym and tells me that I was
a big
part of that. And this is not someone who, you know, I interact with daily, at least that I knew of. Clearly, I am interacting with him daily. He's listening and reading. And so, like, that's the kind of thing that's had probably the biggest impact on me since I've started sharing. I certainly had people in my circle. I mean, I had a lady last year who I thought I knew super, super well. She's in the real estate space. I love her to pieces in the real estate world. And she shared something with me. She connected the dots between some of the stuff I was sharing. And she called me and she says, I need to ask you something. And we had this conversation, and we were on the phone for 2.5 hours. It's the most connected we ever were. We were connected before, but we were never connected like this. We're like brother, sister now. Yeah. And it was amazing. And what I learned, I already knew she was a strong woman, like just because of how I knew her. Once I heard her story, once she opened up behind the curtain, I was like, holy cow, like I can't love this woman anymore. You know, she's so powerful. And she was kind enough to share that with me. And it was all because I had shown her a little behind my curtain. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I got to reach out and have this conversation. She was already in my circle. I already thought highly of her, but now we're here. Yeah, now we're here. And I'm love having, you know, so that's really, it's happening organically. Like I didn't plan. I was just going to the gym this morning. Like I had my earbuds in. I don't usually talk to anyone there. Mm-hmm. You know, but he come running up, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So,
I mean, you know, imagine if social media took this path of what you do so courageously. So thank you. What I do, what others do, like us, instead of the path that it's been of everything's perfect. Look at me. Look at all this glamour. Look at all this perfect facade. If we commit to that human side of the story, which ain't always pretty, and that's all right.
You can
you can have some good, but you can also have that human side. That's just awesome. I love that you're doing it, man. I really do.
Thank you, Jeb. It means a lot hearing you say those words. I know it's not the first time. We're not just saying that on camera today. We've shared some things with each other just about, you know, how I feel about how I feel about you and vice versa. But you're right. I think social media, I look at my kids and, you know, our kids' generation, you know, they're growing up and this is their world. Mm-hmm. And we're so quick, as a society to share the beautiful vacation, the fancy car, you know, us all sitting around the table with smiles on our faces at the holiday dinner, you know, and I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't share those things. I mean, a lot of those things are organic things as well. Yeah. But it goes back, you take this back to the real estate side where, hey, just sold in 37 seconds. You know, that tells one story about what we do. And maybe I did just sell that property in 37. I mean, I probably prepped the sale for months and months before, but that's
37 months.
Yeah. But that's besides the point. But like, it's what story are we telling? Yeah. And then what's our future generation reading about that? If all they're saying is Jeff and Al's highlight reel and it's all the best stuff from our lives. It's all the glamour shots. It's all the, we're out on the boat, you know, and we're doing all the, you know, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't share those things, but you know, being emotionally available and vulnerable and sharing some of the realities and struggles that you go through, I think is much more relatable than any of that stuff. And that's what connects me, you know, having some wild success at whatever it is you do, certainly might tell part of some story, but it's also something that could be fabricated. I mean, some of the people who are in the most pain in the world, you know, portray this wonderful persona. You know, and it's like, wow, I never knew. Well, yeah, that's because they did everything they could do to mask their reality, maybe even to themselves. Like I think about when I did it, I didn't want to admit certain things to myself. So if I could showcase myself in a positive way, you know, maybe that was convincing myself that I was okay too. So.
Love it, man. Love everything you're about, Al Perry. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you for this conversation.
Yeah.
Honored to be here.
Thank you. Great show. Here's the thing as I wrap up, what Al just did, what I just did, what I do on this show every week, if not for anything, creates a living record of what my kids are going to see for future generations. They're going to know exactly the person their father was. My friends are going to know the person I am, the people I do business with. I want you to go take the example that Al just gave. I continue to give here on the show. Go live it in your life. Go live this week as an example of courage. Show the shiny side, show the dark side, show all the sides in between. Be that person and show out who you are. You never know who's lurking. You never know who needs to be in your space. Even though they don't comment, you need to be there for them. Go live as that example of courage. We'll see you next week on Big Ticket Life. Take care. You've just heard another impactful show on the Big Ticket Life, challenging leaders to lead with courage and work to solve the clash that exists between those they lead and the lives they live. Now is the time to focus on leveling up the humans you lead and the impact you can create in their lives. It's time to lead with courage and be a living example of courage. I'd love for you to go to thejeffg.com/mission. That's thejeffg.com/mission right now and book a call with me to discuss how to integrate these examples of courage into your leadership, how to approach your team with vulnerability, and most importantly, so we can plan out how you'll invest and level up the humans you lead for maximum healing and impact so you can be the leader your people need every day. Visit thejeffg.com/mission. That's thejeffg.com/mission right now and book a call with me today.